folks, it's getting close to go time. That call, by the way, I wanted to introduce our guest and taking back to a thrilling moment.
Sheehan finds Barnes, who breaks tackles down the middle of the field.
Wow.
Stiff arms a man at the 15.
Stone! At the high!
And takes it in! Freddie Barnes! A one-man wrecking crew!
Yep, the magnificent Freddie Barnes during his record-setting 155-catch season. He is the voice of Bowling Green football. Follow him on Twitter, the handle at Todd Walker, WIMA. Really appreciate the time. Todd, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Good to hear that memory. Freddie Barnes, yeah, he was really a one-man offense in 2009.
Yeah, by the way, tell your color analyst to calm down and let you get the thought out first.
Yeah, we'll coach him up on that.
By the way, as a first-time guest, I'd like, you know, a little background. I mentioned you're the voice of the Falcons since 2003. Where do you hail from? You know, where did you go to school, and what led you to this gig calling the BGSU games?
Well, I'm originally from Detroit, but really grew up around Lima, Ohio, which is about an hour from Bowling Green, and I work in commercial radio here in Lima for iHeartMedia. We started the network back in 2003, and as part of that, I became the voice of the Falcons and have been doing it since then.
Sounds awesome. Obviously, you know, Urban Meyer landed his first head coaching gig there, 2001, yeah. After he left Notre Dame. He left, you arrived, you know, all the controversy surrounding him now. I'm kind of curious, was there any kind of reaction among those close to the Bowling Green program about what was happening in Columbus, or have you guys pretty much been focused on yourselves?
Yeah, it's really not made a blip in Bowling Green other than, you know, it's made the big blip in college football overall just because of the nature of it. But, you know, Urban, while he left some with a bad taste in their mouth the way he departed, really those fences have been mended. He was at an event this summer, as a matter of fact, with all the other living former coaches, or most of them, for Bowling Green, including Don Nealon and Dave Clawson. So, Urban has been very good about coming back to help Bowling Green with certain things when he's able. So, you know, but if you're in the state of Ohio, that does tend to overshadow just about everything.
That's probably an understatement. Speaking of coaches, after winning the Mid-American Conference in 2015, Dino Babers left for Syracuse. The powers that be brought in Mike Jinks, who'd been an assistant at Texas Tech, won 4 games in his first year, dipped to 2 last year. So I guess what's the level of optimism around the program that despite a tough non-conference schedule and some of the returning talent, that he does have things going in the right direction?
Yeah, I think the level of optimism depends on from what seat you're sitting in. I think inside the program, they're cautiously optimistic that they will be able to be competitive within the conference, with the caveat being, of course, they have 3 really tough games against Power 5 schools before they really get into the conference schedule. So they think that they can get more of Carl Pelini's defense installed by the time they're conference season rolls around. They think they have a pretty potent offense no matter who they're playing. So I think the expectation within the program is that they can get to 500 on the season overall by having a strong conference record. Now, that games with the Power 5 teams, you know, they fully believe they could pull an upset somewhere, but really you're paid by what you do against your conference, and that's the hope and the expectation, I think, within the program of what they can do. Now, outside the program, I don't sense a whole lot of optimism. In fact, I sense a whole lot of negativity. But, you know, when you win 2 games after a year, you win 4, that tends to happen.
Talking Bowling Green football with their play-by-play man, Todd Walker. And for folks who are wondering, Oregon, Maryland, Georgia Tech. That's a tough non-conference schedule. I want to get to starting quarterback Jarrett Daigie, who split time with James Morgan last year and started the last 4 games, played really well in the loss to Buffalo. And now as a sophomore, Todd, what could you tell us about his game as he, you know, officially has the reins of this offense?
Yeah, Jarrett was real effective last year as a true freshman, and he would have started the last, I think, 8 games it was, except he got hurt and had to sit out a couple of games and then was reinserted when he was healthy. But you could see a vast difference in the efficiency of the offense and the decision-making. If you look back to some of the key losses that Bowling Green had, a lot of them featured horrible turnovers, and that was really the bugaboo of James Morgan. He had a penchant for the pick six, and that hurt Bowling Green tremendously. So when Jarrett was in there, the offense really hummed. And this year, he's even more in control. He's fully aware of all the aspects of the offense. So the offense is really in its third season, whereas the defense is starting over schematically. But Jarrett has also put on 15 or 20 pounds of muscle, which is typical for a kid that goes from his first to second year. So I think he is poised to really lead a potent offense.
Yeah, and along those lines, Andrew Clare is the feature back, had some terrific games as a true freshman, four straight over 100, third team all-conference. Seems to be one of those elusive guys who, yards after contact. Now with a full season under his belt, what's the level of optimism about what this young guy could do?
Oh, Andrew Clare really is a fantastic back. They just tried to manage his workload last year as a true freshman and a little bit on the smaller side. They didn't want him to be the number one, although he got plenty of work. Now he's a year bigger and stronger. He'll be the feature back. He can be special. I mean, this guy has done it against all their opponents, conference and non-conference. So they expect big things from him, and really they've got a couple of freshmen behind him they think can be very dynamic as well. Really, I think they believe four running backs can, quote-unquote, get the job done. But Andrew Clare is clearly the number one. He averaged almost 7 yards a carry last year as a true freshman. And this year he'll be running behind an offensive line that we think is a lot better and a lot healthier. So there's no telling what kind of numbers he'll put up.
Yeah, I wanted to get to that because obviously as good as Dagey and Clare are, the big fellas up front have to produce. You know, I know they lost a couple of fifth-year seniors on the left side. They bring their center back and the entire right side. And you might have alluded to on the left side, two guys are back who are injured. The line coach, Stephen Hamby, well, what's he saying about what this group is capable of?
I think they really believe the offensive line is good to go. I mean, they really even think that the backups are capable, and this is a couple of years building this up. And you're right, a lot of these guys have played some or a lot because of injuries to other people through the last couple of years. So everybody on that line, you could say, was a starter of some variety at some point over the last year or two. They just weren't necessarily the full-time starter, although Lorenzo Taborn would have been if he hadn't gotten injured last year. So these guys are, I think, going to be very, very good. It's sort of an overlooked unit right now because arguably we lost our two best offensive linemen. Ryan Hunter, I think, has a good chance to make the Chiefs here at the final cuts, and Tim McAuliffe was a four-year starter. So, but despite that, I think the guys that are coming back as a group are ready to step into those roles, and overall I think the offensive line is going to be very good, and I would say better than last year.
You know, you alluded to the other side of the ball, which had a rough year defensively, and when the season wrapped, Coach Jinks dismissed his defensive coordinator. Enter Carl Pellini and a whole new staff. And folks, yeah, if you hear a familiar name, he is the brother of Bo, worked at him with Nebraska and recently for Youngstown State. What's the word about landing a guy with his resume and how big of an impact it'll have on that Falcon defense?
We sure hope that it has a big impact. Yeah, and you're right. He's a known commodity, a name in the college football world, and I think it was a real good get for Coach Jinks to get him in there. They also brought in Jimmy Williams, who was a former Nebraska star and an NFL player and a coach at a number of different colleges who's highly regarded also. So I think defensively they really have their work cut out for them with some inexperience in the system. Also, we had our leading defensive lineman blew out his Achilles a couple weeks ago, David Konowalski, so his season is over. I think up front really is where the questions are. I think they really are in a spot in the back end, kind of like the offensive line. There are a lot of guys in the secondary that took their lumps in previous seasons by either having to play out of position or playing too early or something of this variety. But now you've got eight or nine guys back there that have seen real playing time and now have some experience behind them. And you've got two guys in particular that were all conference in their past coming back from injuries, hopefully fully back, cornerback Clint Stevens and safety Jamari Bozeman. If those guys can be at the level they were before their injuries, that back end could be pretty good.
And, yeah, and obviously Fred Garth, Marcus Milton, that does look like it could be a really good unit. One final thought for our Bowling Green play-by-play man, Todd Walker. I'm always curious as to the view from the other side. You know, we live in the Oregon bubble in recent years. You know, you've played mostly Big Ten teams out of league, plus Tennessee, now a Pac-12 team. So what's the buzz among the coaches and players and the guy have you spoken with about the type of Duck team they'll face to open this season?
Well, I think everybody's a bit intrigued with, you know, the coaching change that happened before the bowl game, and of course the quarterback Herbert gets a lot of play. But I've been trying to tell people I think this Ducks defense is better than people just assume. I think we've all become accustomed to Oregon putting up points and being an exciting up and down show, which I'm sure they will be. But, as I look at it, I'm pretty impressed with what they're bringing back defensively. And really, their resume from last year is pretty solid. A lot of top 50 rankings across their defensive numbers. So, but, you know, that I guess if you're looking for what is the thought about Oregon in this part of the country, you know, it's, I think, fairly thought of as a pretty flashy football program that's done a lot of great things and is an exciting brand of football. So, I think everybody's looking forward to going to a place that really we've not ventured to very often. In fact, Bowling Green's only made 13 appearances in the Pacific time zone in 100 years of football, so it's not very common.
All right. Appreciate the great insight, folks. He's the voice of the Falcons. I know it's a busy week. You're getting ready for opening day, traveling, so we greatly appreciate your generosity with your time and talking Bowling Green football with us. Todd, travel safe. Enjoy your stay in Eugene, and thanks again for joining us on our show.
Hey, thanks for inviting me. We're looking forward to coming out there.
All right. Have a good one. Thanks so much, Todd.
Thanks.